Helen Jones, and tonight I have with me in the studio Dr. Peter Hammond. Good evening.
Good evening, Emma.
So, tonight we are going to be discussing thought crimes, thought police, and the threats to freedom of speech. So, we'll be discussing the rise of Orwellian thought police and how the new hate speech bill effectively makes biblical teachings into thought crimes.
Basically. Yes, I mean, just the name, hate crimes. You think, well, we're against hate. I mean, we believe in love and God is love. And, well, of course, hate speech and hate crimes are bad. But remember, many times governments give a name to something that sounds, well, that sounds like a good idea. Sure, we want this. And meanwhile, it's a euphemism for more state control, intrusion, a hindrance on freedom of speech and so on. So there was a time when most people understood that freedom of speech was a good idea. And there was a time when universities championed free speech. There must be no censorship. And people would be saying, we need iron sharpening iron, a free marketplace of ideas on a university campus, higher education, so on. And investigation is never feared by truth. Truth never fears investigation. And now suddenly we've got these same people screaming, we need hate crime bills, making free speech into hate speech. And it's, in fact, when you look into it, it's quite disturbing, because you would have thought that everybody understood that a free society needs freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of the press, freedom of association, freedom of conscience, freedom of religion. But whereas in the past you could shut somebody up by saying traitor or heretic, because in the old days, if you're guilty of treason, you could have your head chopped off. Guillotine, axe, whatever. If you were a heretic, you might get burned at the stake by the Inquisition. Well, today we've got new Inquisitions and we've got new forms of totalitarian control. Instead of calling a person a heretic or a traitor, now the people say bigot, homophobic bigot, narrow-minded zealot, anti-Semitic, anti-homosexual, homophobic bigot, or anything along that line. So if they are able to accuse a person of guilty of hate speech or of a thought crime, what you now have is just new terminology to shut down free speech. So George Orwell, who wrote 1984, he said, which was a real political satire, but he was saying that in the time of universal deceit, telling the truth will become a revolutionary act.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what we're facing now. And so with this new hate speech bill that's being revised, how what does it actually state? How has it been changed? I know that there's also a religious exemption clause within the hate speech bill, which people are saying, oh, that's wonderful, like they're considering us. But what is it exactly that this bill is stating?
Right, so this bill, it's called the Prevention and Combating of Hate Crimes and Hate Speech Bill. So Prevention and Combating of Hate Crimes and Hate Speech Bill. It's almost, if you saw Minority Report, pre-crime, where they're dealing with people because they believe that you're going to commit this crime, which, of course, is a great problem, because the prevention and combating of hate crimes and hate speech bill. So there's a bit of a pre-crime aspect to this, where you can get prosecuted not because you intended to, but because it's construed that if using these terms, you could be guilty of later having a thought crime, which could lead to a hate crime, and therefore you get prosecuted before you've even done anything wrong. Not that you necessarily did anything wrong. So
or intended to.
Yes, but the state knows your mind better than you do.
Oh, absolutely.
And your motives. So Clause 4.1 of the bill makes hate speech a crime with dire repercussions from a freedom of speech and freedom of expression, freedom of conscience point of view, because the offence would make any speech, and by the way, for speech, they mean even distribution of that speech, which could be social media post, sharing a social media post, it could be
liking
anything
from a social media post.
Even liking or following or joining and so on and so forth, a group where somebody else posts something. You might say something quite innocent, such as, well, I think that marriage can only be between a man and a woman.
Hate speech!
Well, in Canada, it's become such that you could lose your job, lose a promotion, be kicked out, given all kinds of hideous penalties. This is coming in place like Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and parts of Europe. So thought crimes are that it used to be part of political satire in 1984 by George Orwell, but now it's becoming unfortunately a reality.
Yeah,
yes.
Sure.
So distribution of these crimes could be construed as harmful, even if your intention wasn't that. So it's not an objective crime. It's now a subjective reading of what other people perceive. So you may not have meant by saying, well, Jesus is the way, the truth, and life. No one comes to the Father but by me. But that can be construed as a hate crime, suggesting that other religions aren't as equally valid, which, of course, many Christians would say, well, no, they're not. and that used to be covered by freedom of conscience, freedom of thought, freedom of expression, freedom of religion. And now they're trying to say, no, that can carry a jail sentence up to 3 years. So hate speech bill is now talking about a three-year jail sentence. Now, bearing in mind that we've got some pretty serious real crimes like murder and rape and kidnapping and terrorism and arson and poaching and cruelty to animals and all sorts of things going on. And instead of dealing with those, they're trying to create a whole new category of crimes of people who in the past would have just been protected by freedom of speech. And so this is very dangerous. And what we think about this whole hate speech bill is it's actually a hateful bill trying to crack down on free speech.
Absolutely. How would something like this even be monitored, though? Because surely it would just turn into a he said, she said. Well, how, like, I don't even understand how something like this would...
Well, the trouble is this goes so against English, Roman Dutch law, where you're innocent till proven guilty, Magna Carta, the burden of proof is on the state. Now it's almost like the burden of proof is on yourself to prove that you weren't guilty of hate speech. You're almost guilty till proven innocent. This is very dangerous. And they came up with a religious exemption clause because of a lot of protests that we had. But the Deputy Minister of Justice explained that this would probably only apply to pulpits. Now, when they say probably only apply to pulpits, that means that, oh, well, your social media post isn't covered by the religious exemption clause. Mm-hmm. Oh, but your street preaching isn't, because that's not a proper pulpit. Oh, but that church isn't a registered church. Or they're not members of the World Council Church, so that's not a real church. Or, oh, but this church only meets in a home or a school hall or a maybe even a scout hall. Therefore, it's not a real church, if it's not a real pulpit. And you may think I'm making this up. No, I'm afraid not. In Cuba, they've locked up tens of thousands of Christians and pastors in labor camps and concentration camps for running unregistered churches and illegal churches because they weren't meeting in a proper building. But very few buildings were allocated and allowed, and no repairs were allowed, no expansions were allowed, and so more and more of the church were in home churches. Sure. In China, most of the Christians, something like 130 million, are in unregistered churches. 130 million unregistered Christians. Not that they're not willing to get registered, but the state's not willing to register them.
Yeah.
So in Cuba and China, we've already seen where you can be in all honesty trying to follow the law, and they even have in their constitution freedom of religion, but in practice, they don't. Mm. It's not like North Korea where they honestly say, well, no church is allowed, and they close everyone down. China pretends that they do have religious freedom, as does Cuba, but they're locking up people all the time for being unregistered Christians in unregistered churches, and that wasn't a real pulpit, and so on and so forth. So you've really got to be suspicious when there's a religious exemption clause, which is only valid for pulpits, because then it'll also be, well, what pulpit? And they say, well, you're not a real church. Because you aren't affiliated to the World Council of Churches, and so it carries on. So this is very dangerous. And why are they doing this? Well, I actually had an opportunity to question the Deputy Minister of Justice, John Jeffrey. He was at a report back meeting we had for Freedom of Religion, SA4SA, who's doing a great job. Mm-hmm. They are advocates, and they've been speaking up for us and representing our concerns. So they organized a report back meeting for the Ministry of Justice, so-called. And so John Jeffrey said that he recognized that the hate speech provision was probably in conflict with the constitutional right to religious freedom, probably in conflict. But he said that our right to express our convictions freely will be protected as long as it doesn't amount to an incitement to violence. And he then gives an example of a minister who he claimed had called for the killing of gays from the pulpit. Now, I've got great trouble believing any pastor's calling for the killing of gays from the pulpit. But one of the delegates at our meeting challenged him on this and said, Now, is this somebody discussing academically what the law of God may require as far as due process of justice goes in a society which has brought back laws against homosexuality? Or is this inciting people to take the law into their own hands? There's a big difference between advocating that abortion be recognized as murder and babies protected by law from the violence of abortion by due process of law, or some rabble rouser calling for individuals to take the law into their own hands and murder abortionists. So he's saying that there's people calling from the pulpit for the killing of gays. Well, I don't know if there's any pulpit doing that. Mm. So he was also challenged by Michael Swain, the director for SA, Freedom of Religion SA, that the bill has all kinds of provisions that have the potential to shut down dialogue and to entrench a polarization of views.
So then you've just said now that this man said that the pastor was telling people to kill gays and whatnot. Now, if that's inaccurate, surely that in itself would be considered hate speech. So now, how
that's true. That's
so how so extensive true. Would this become? This would literally just turn into chaos. I find that offensive, therefore you can go to jail. No, well, I find the fact that you think that's offensive. And
it could be. However, bear in mind, the government determines what is hate speech. They're the referee. And they are also the jury and the executioner and everything else. So it's quite bad when the prosecutor is also the jury and he's also defining. Mm. So you don't really have a check and balance. So this actually came up. So this ANC, Deputy Minister of Justice, John Jeffrey, said his department had received over 76,000 submissions. And the overwhelming majority was against it, by the way, but still. So at this point, a member of Parliament, Steve Swart, actually challenged Mr. Jeffrey over the danger of criminalising free speech. He said, our legal system's overwhelmed and is not coping with real serious crimes like armed robberies, assaults, murders and rape. Is it wise and helpful to swamp the courts even further, which are almost at paralysis point, gridlock? And why would we want to bring in time-wasting, money-wasting intrusions into freedom of speech and freedom of religion? Well, then, Deputy Minister of Justice, John Jeffrey, said, we need this bill in the light of the wars of religion. Well, at this, I had to stand up. So I stood up and I challenged him from the floor and I said, this is ironic that a politician is talking about wars of religion, which ended 350 years ago with the Peace of Westphalia in 1640. That was the end of the wars of religion. We have just come out of a century, the 20th century, where secular states, humanist states, atheist states, socialist and communist states have murdered over 190 million of their own citizens. The wars of religion, which ended 3.5 centuries ago, pale into insignificance compared to the colossal body count of secular states in our own lifetimes. Mm. Secular humanism has caused most of the wars and most of the massacres of the 20th century, as documented by Professor R.J. Rummel in Death by Government and the Black Book of Communism, which documents from the archives of the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe countries alone, over 100 million of their own citizens killed in peacetime in the name of atheism just between 1917 and 1991. And all this started with registering churches and restricting freedom of speech.
Interesting.
The hate speech bill threatens freedom of speech, restricts freedom of conscience, erodes freedom of religion. Who determines what hate speech is? Are we to believe the government, which in the last 25 years has failed to deal with kill the Boer, kill the farmer slogans and songs, who have...
They've involved themselves in that.
Yes, even the government themselves been saying, bring me my machine gun, all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And speaking about taking farms away from the whites and giving them to our people, and with expropriation without compensation, other highly incendiary, highly emotive, highly irresponsible, accusing farmers of stealing the land, which is a false narrative and so unfair and so untrue. And in fact, as AfroForum and others have offered, tens of thousands of rand reward to anyone who can point out where any white farmer stole his land.
So and, they want to...
And nobody's taken them up on this offer. So when is the government going to deal with real, actual, genuine hate speech and hate practice when we've had over 4,000 brutal murders and tortures of South African farmers and their family members in the last 2.5 decades of ANC misrule? Are we to believe that the ANC government, this is all what I said from the floor, actually really intends to deal with genuine hate speech and incitement to violence such as found in many mosques in the country where jihad is proclaimed? Are they really going to be monitoring Friday messages at mosques? Freedom of religion is not negotiable. Are we to accept that pornography is legally protected as free speech and blasphemy is meant to be accepted as free speech, but now our sermons and our postings are to be examined to see if anything can be construed as offensive by subjective secularists who've got a track record of harassing and prosecuting Christians? I said in the past, rulers stifle dissent by accusing their critics of treason. Religious rulers silence opposition by declaring their critics to be heretics. And today we see rulers trying to silence opposition by shouting hate speech. Freedom of speech is essential for any free society. And absolutely, most of the delegates assembled responded to my statements and my question with applause. This is about the only applause of the day at the event, by the way. And this totally unsettled this John Jeffries, this minister.
I can't believe it.
And he stuttered and he stammered and he tried to formulate a reply and he neglected to address any of the issues that are raised. And all he could lamely say was, I don't think that it's constructive to try and compare who was most responsible for deaths in the last century. Let's just agree that some people died because of wars of religion. And that was the answer. I mean, how lame is that?
That's absolutely ridiculous.
He had just made what amounted to hate speech, as you observed, by stating that Christians are calling from the pulpit for extrajudicial murders and killings and so on. And I bring up the fact that secular states have been using bills like this to clamp down religious freedom with disastrous consequences, even giving examples of the thousands of churches closed down in Cuba and tens of thousands of Christians imprisoned under similar legislation enacted under Fidel Castro. And he didn't address any one of those issues raised.
So he said, he made a statement, something but from his opinion. You gave historical facts. He then once again gave his opinion. So according to his own bill, he'd be the only one in the wrong there.
Correct, because to them, facts are no excuse and truth is no defense. And it's a subjective interpretation that if the state perceives that what you said could be construed as hate speech, even if that wasn't the intention, even if it was factually true, even if you had historic objective evidence behind it, that would still be a crime that could get you 3 years in jail.
So then how could, for example, a teacher ever teach from a history book or ever teach anything of those sorts? If one of the children then find it offensive, but it's actually historically true, but you just don't like what you're hearing, well, this makes zero sense.
That's very true in history, but just consider biology. Mm. You as a teacher could stand up and say there's two genders, and somebody could take offense at that and say, well, I think there's 72 genders. Apparently, some people have actually said that.
If you look, X chromosomes, Y chromosomes, it's biologically accurate. So yes. How can that be
But false? You could even get in trouble in maths class now. Because somebody could construe that your interpretation of math, which may be objective, but the fact is they're offended.
Yeah.
Because you said so-and-so and so-and-so equals this, and next thing, you've committed a hate crime. So this looks like an excuse to clamp down on free speech. Hate speech is free speech that the politicians don't like.
So what then would you say is... What do you think the government's intention is behind this bill then? Why is a bill like this trying to be passed?
It's clear that there's an anti-Christian bias amongst many in this present government who don't want Christian freedoms to continue in the way they do now. And so I don't believe that the political appointees will be fair, even-handed or objective in determining what constitutes hate speech and what does not. There's no doubt that there have been vast amounts of abuse already in this country right now. There are people who've gone to jail for using racially insensitive and inflammatory terminology, while others have barely got a rap on their knuckles, who government employees, policemen and so on, who are speaking hate speech, genocide, actual incitement to real violence while real violence is taking place. Mm-hmm. So it seems there's a bias. There is and bearing in mind how this government absolutely loves the Cuban, Chinese, North Korean examples. Yeah. So they seem to really love the left, and you can see a lot of the communist prejudice amongst the state. And even the clothing of many of these people, when you've got the Minister of Education at the time, Vlad Inzamani, wearing a Communist Party cap, Communist Party t-shirt with a huge Communist Party hammer and sickle, blood red banner behind him, and this is meant to be the Minister of Higher Education. So they're not even hiding their prejudice. And we've just come out of a century when the communists have been murdering Christians by the tens of millions. We should be concerned when they want to clamp down freedom of speech, because remember, we've got a Bill of Rights that gives you freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of conscience, freedom of association, freedom of religion, freedom of worship. All of these freedoms are in a Bill of Rights, but now somehow they want to be able to circumnavigate that and avoid respecting it by just creating a whole new category of crime, a thought crime,
yeah,
a hate crime.
Surely the freedom of speech is a much better thing to have in place, as out of our own morals and values, we should know that saying certain things are hurtful and certain things are wrong, and therefore not say those certain things, instead of rather having a bill making it illegal to say things that are nasty. And then past that point, until the only thing that you can actually legally say is rainbows and kittens. Because other than that, apparently everything's illegal. So that makes zero sense. Surely we should rather have freedom of speech, just like it says in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not give false testimony against thy neighbor. Yes. And other than something like that, you should rather be able to then speak your mind, speak your opinion.
That's so true. Every one of the Ten Commands has an implied right. But notice the focus of God's Ten Commands is on our responsibilities.
Mm.
But the right is implicit. So that, for example, when we say you shall not commit murder, okay, it's obviously forbidding murder, adult suicide, abortion, euthanasia. But there's a right implied, and the right is the right to life. But I don't walk around demanding my right to life. I must respect other people's right to life. So it's focusing more on my responsibilities. You shall not commit adultery. Well, it forbids, of course, adultery, pornography, perversion, all of that. But the right implied is sanctity of marriage. You shall not steal. Obviously, it forbids fraud, theft, socialism, laziness, vandalism. But it protects private ownership property. Take, for example, the only restrictions on freedom of speech in the Ten Commandments is you shall not take the name of your Lord your God in vain.
Mm-hmm.
And you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. So lying, or slander, or libel is forbidden, and blasphemy is forbidden. But that's the only restriction of freedom of speech. Outside that, you've got tremendous freedom of speech. So in the Ten Commandments, you've got every right respected by being concerned for your responsibilities. So if we went the biblical way, we would respect people's life, respect people's property, respect people's name. You don't steal another man's life. You don't steal another man's wife. You don't steal his name. Because good name, you don't steal his property, you are not jealous and envious of him, you don't bear false witness against him. Now, when I respect another person's rights, then everyone else's rights are protected. Mm. So, but today, when you walk around, I demand my rights, but in doing this, I'm trampling all over somebody else's rights.
Mm, absolutely, and committing idolatry.
Yes, well, that too.
So, who's responsible for the revision of this bill? How has this come up? Why is it being revised? Who's responsible for that?
Totally being driven by the ANC, the African National Congress, and the Southern Communist Party. And interestingly enough, we actually asked this character, John Jeffries, where this is coming from. And he denied that when we said that it came from the ANC, he said, no, it's got nothing to do with the ANC. He said, this has come from community groups. And so we want to know, well, what community groups have actually been demanding this? And he said, the Jewish Board of Deputies. And interesting. But who's driven? Well, he's ANC. He's an ANC appointee. The people promoting it, the people who run these different departments are all ANC. But he is trying to deny that it had anything to do with the African National Congress. But it was just responding to a community group, the Jewish Board Deputies. Well, we represent community groups, Christian Action Network, Africa Christian Action, Reformation Society. I mean, there's all kinds of community groups that we represent who are not supporting what they're coming out with. So here you've got this delegate saying, no, it's not an ANC bill, but it's just the Jewish Board of Deputies and LGBTQ lobby that had promoted. I said, well, how did it come to be present before Parliament? Well, our department, the Ministry of Justice, tabled it and said, is the Ministry of Justice consisting of all political parties or just ANC appointees? He had to admit, yes, he had to admit that the Ministry of Justice was made up of ANC members, as he himself was.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
However, he still felt the need to emphasize it's a lie to suggest it's an ANC bill. But all the ANC members in the ANC-appointed Ministry of Justice had formulated and put forward the so-called hate speech bill, and thousands of churches had been closed in Cuba and tens of thousands of pastors imprisoned under similar legislation enacted by their good friend Fidel Castro. So for them to try and say it's a complete lie to suggest it's an ANC bill, but all of you who've produced this and promoted it, you're all ANC. And he then said, no rights are absolute. All rights must have limitations. And he used the example of banning an American pastor, Steve Anderson, from coming to South Africa. And we thought, well, gee, that's intriguing. But whatever happened to being innocent till proven guilty? And truth does not fear investigation. Stifling debate and criminalizing dissent does not make for a free society. Condemning people without granting a meaningful opportunity to answer accusations is unjust. And just because somebody else accuses somebody that we don't know of horrible things doesn't mean it's true, just like if they accuse you. And if we can allow people to just be summarily tried by media or by some government bureaucrat, then where's this going to go? And so one of the most succinct summaries of this was Nadine Badenhorst of the 4SA Freedom of Religion SA. She said, the invasive registration process proposed by the commission is unconstitutional, unworkable, and it's unnecessary. And I think that's in fact a good summary. Unconstitutional, unworkable, and unnecessary.
Exactly. Like, in contrast to what we're just speaking about with the Ten Commandments, where there's only 10 limitations, other than that, freedom of everything. Whereas in our country, we'd rather have thousands and thousands of laws. Why are we now adding even more laws? Why are they
They're not even enforcing the ones we've got.
Exactly. And why are they not using existing laws to deal with these abuses that we are facing, or that people are facing, and therefore they're trying to clamp down on?
It's hard to avoid the conclusion that the goal is not to deal with real, genuine hate speech or real crime, but to actually stifle dissent and criticism so that they could have a mechanism, a legal tool in their hands with which to criminalize dissent, criticism, and opposition to their corruption and looting of the country.
Because they want to play the game, make the rules, and be the umpire so we can get the red card.
Yes. In fact, if it was just a red card, it wouldn't be so bad, but ending up in their hellholes called jails and prisons would be a whole lot more mean. And as you are aware, when governments act like this, you can get fines, you can get audits, you can get extra taxes, and you can get in prison. And they can ruin people just with, even if you win the case in court, they can waste so much of your time and money with it. So the point is, it's better for Christians, use your freedom of speech or lose your freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. We need to stand up, we need to speak out, we need to step out, we need to use our social media contacts, use our voice, use our vote. This is an election year, but they've said that the end of this week, the 15th of February, is a cutoff point for people giving responses. So they have asked for comments on the revised hate speech bill, the Prevention and Combating of Hate Crimes and Hate Speech Bill. So you can communicate to your elected representative in Parliament, whichever party represents your interest and that you voted for, write to them and ask them to speak out against this. You can also write directly to the committee secretary, Mr. Vonani Romano, and his email address is vramano@parliament.gov.za. So it's vramano@parliament.gov.za. Now, if you have trouble imbibing all that or getting those details down, you don't have a pen near you, if you just go onto the christianaction.org.za website, we've got links to the 4SA, the Freedom of Religion SA, a website where they've got far more details. We've got articles on the hate speech bill and on the freedom of speech attack, threats to freedom of speech articles on our website. So look for these articles, get involved, and stand up and speak out and see if you can get your church or cell group or just yourself. Write a letter. Just, it doesn't have to be long. One word, one sentence. You know, we do not support this revised hate speech bill. They tried to say, well, you know, we did revise it. Well, yes, they put in a religious exemption clause and then said, but that's only going to apply to pulpits, which means it's not going to affect you in the street, or should we say on social media. you could get into trouble, not just with Mike Zuckerberg putting you into Facebook jail for a month. You could find yourself in trouble with a government that wants to put you in a real prison for three years.
With real criminals, murderers, yes, rapists.
And therefore your life might not be worth living.
Absolutely. So as Christians, we have a responsibility to stand out, to proclaim the truth. And if we don't, then this will be suppressed upon us, and all it takes for evil to flourish is for good people to do nothing. So we need to get involved. We need to speak out. We need to proclaim the truth. That is our responsibility as citizens, and especially as believers. So let's get involved. Let's get interceding. Let's pray for our country. Let's get together, have prayer groups, encourage one another, and really try and intercede for our country and humble ourselves and repent and turn to God.
It's true. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And all that's necessary for evil triumph is for good people to know nothing. So it's absolutely vital that we take the example of those people in Eastern Europe. The Christians of East Germany started the Leipzig prayer meeting. And they made their symbol the candle. And their principle was continually, the smallest candle is more powerful than all the darkness. Not all the darkness can put out even one candle. Light is more powerful than darkness. Truth is more powerful than error. Freedom of thought and freedom of conscience more powerful than oppression and the KGB. The Christian church is more powerful than the Soviet Union. And so the Berlin Wall came down, the Iron Curtain collapsed, the whole Soviet Union collapsed, all of Eastern Europe went free, because of Christians making a stand. And the symbol of their stand was a candle. And they would often put all lights off in their home. Often they didn't have to. It was often the load shedding, power failure, blackouts. Anyway, but they put a candle in the window, just making a stand. And they'd come to meetings with candles. And one person would light, and they'd all light and spread out. And you'd get this massive blaze of light coming out. Just the simple thing of one candle, one spark can start this huge movement. And in fact, that was became known as the Leipzig Prayer Meeting. They prayed for 7 years.
Wow.
7 year Jericho prayer march. Down came the Berlin Wall. Down came the Iron Curtain. Down came the Soviet Union. Cold War ended.
Amazing.
Now, I remember that was my lifetime. I was involved with smuggling Bibles into Eastern Europe, going through Czech and Charlie, getting behind the Iron Curtain, going as far as Romania, Poland, Bulgaria, Hungary, all these places, got to Albania, Yugoslavia, all these places behind the Iron Curtain before the Berlin Wall came down and afterwards. And the people there letting us know light is more powerful than darkness. So we need to speak up. And if we could just encourage people, you have a constitutionally protected right to freedom of speech and freedom of thought, and you must use it or lose it.
It says in Galatians 5, for freedom Christ has set us free. So stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery. So we are to stand up. And then it says later on, but rather use this freedom to serve one another in love. And that is exactly what our responsibility is. And that's exactly what we should be doing.
Indeed. I mean, this is where Christians stand. We believe in loving God and loving our neighbor. And that means we can't keep silent.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Dr. Hammond. Good evening.